Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to your Thursday Club. This is Fulhamish in partnership with The Athletic. My name is Jack Collins, and I am in the hot seat sitting in for Sammy, which means that the Thursday Club is only too strong today, and I'm joined by chief Fulham writer at The Athletic, Mr. Peter Rutt. So you've been promoted again, mate.
I know. I'm finding this very strange. I'm missing Sammy's enthusiasm. Not that you weren't enthusiastic, Jack, but I don't know. Maybe it's Sammy's dulcet tones, his iconic voice. I mean, you've got a lot of work to do here, mate.
We're going to be missing the foghorn, I think, is the thing I'm going to miss most in this episode. Oh, you know, I don't have a foghorn button in the way that Sammy does. So that's quite upsetting.
Good improvise.
Yeah, I mean, I could just make it
use that for some kind of horn.
I could just make it with my mouth. Maybe that's something that I'll treat you to at the end of the episode if you're lucky. But since we've done a Fulhamish episode last, there has been a deadline day, and that's where we're going to start today's episode. And Fulham brought, you know, as is custom, two people in on the deadline, pretty much between 11 o'clock and 12 o'clock start. We signed Domingos Quina and Nathaniel Chalobah from Watford, bringing them back under the tutelage of former manager Marco Silva, of course. And Peter, it did feel like it's become one of those things that Fulham have to put in a couple of deal sheets just at the end, just to really like get us excited again.
Yeah, I think I was having a conversation because I went into the Athletic office, into Athletic Towers for the day, and one of the conversations was, oh, you know, are you going to be busy? I was like, well, of course we're going to be busy. I'm going to be here until 1 a.m. And lo and behold, I was there until the early hours, waiting for Fulham to sign, seal and deliver two new faces. I think I wrote in a piece today, it didn't feel as, you know, urgent this year. It didn't feel as though there were cracks to be papered over. It felt like this was a window, a deadline day where if there was good business to be done, then Fulham should do it and make the right additions. It was almost, you know, I mean, look, we think back to last year and that desperate urge to get central defenders and just the whole feel of it. I mean, was it the Aston Villa game where you had Tony Khan tweeting about the situation with defenders? Scott Parker in almost every press conference calling for new signings, and then of course it went on into the night, and those arrivals did come, and they did come through the door, and it was like there was that sort of relief. This year it was a sense of, well, you know, kind of job done, and it sort of, you know, went into the evening. I think, you know, we can talk about needing a right back, but they went into the evening thinking, right, we need to replace Anguissa because he's gone out the door. Try and strengthen that midfield. Can we get a right back if the opportunity presents? Nearly did in Reggie Cannon. And once that had gone through, once they'd been signed, sealed and delivered, it was all good. I think it did. The only thing, and it, of course, with the situation surrounding Matt Grimes, and we can talk about that at greater length, it got that sense of, well, where what's happening here? Is there sort of, are we scrambling around in the dark? But from sort of the discussions I was having on the day and subsequently, it didn't really seem that way. And I guess that sort of reflects the positive feel of everything so far this summer.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's one of those things where you went in, and I was saying this on the Jack and Joe show on YouTube at the time, that it felt like we were like, okay, if something comes in, that's a bonus now. It felt like the squad was strong enough. Yes, we're a wee bit light in centre midfield, and you can roll with that. And obviously we got those reinforcements in. But even if they hadn't come in, I think most fans would have felt that there was enough in the tank to get through at least to January, you know, with the squad that Fulham currently had. And in the vein that Fulham are playing at the moment, additions didn't feel too necessary. I think something that's maybe jumped out to me is that Fulham currently have one loan. And that's amazing, considering where we were at this point last year, right? The one loan that Fulham have is Domingos Quina, who has an option, as I'm sure we'll discuss, and we'll come on to all the players individually. But when you compare that to last year, where Areola was on loan, Anderson was on loan, Loftus-Cheek was on loan, Lamina was on loan, Lookman was on loan, Madja was on loan, Aina was on loan. We had seven loanees in the squad last year. This year we have one. And that difference, and I think maybe we'll come on to what exactly it means and how the market feels so different and how Fulham feel different and how this window felt different, is that for the first time in a while, you look at the squad and you go, right, yes, we do need to pick up some players if we get promoted. And if that happens, we'll need to strengthen the squad. Everyone needs to strengthen the squad when they go up. But we're not going to have to spend half our budget on making loans permanent. And that in itself feels like a positive from where Fulham have been over the last couple of years.
Even in the Championship a couple of years ago, you know, Anthony Knockaert, Ivan Cavallero, and those were deals that weren't, you know, when you talk about Knockaert, it wasn't the best deal in terms of what it tied Fulham to. I think at the time when you look at Knockaert, you think, oh, okay, Championship pedigree, he's been promoted a few times, clearly hasn't worked out, didn't work out at Forest last year, and he's of course still on the books now. Cavallero was seen a bit more of, but the way those deals were sort of structured, it wasn't in Fulham's best interest, I don't think, in the longer term. This year, I think it's not just that there aren't those loans. You look at the players that have been brought in on permanence, and I think we'll talk about the window in a more general sense in a bit, but you look at like Wilson and you look at Rodrigo Muniz, who's what, 20, Wilson's still 24. Chalobah's 26, Keena's 21. These are players with that elevation, that space to grow, and the permanent guys on the books. You know, Anthony Robinson, Harrison Reed still in the middle of his career, and Kenny Tete we talked about, and Tosin Adebayo. But you know, there is that
young, good,
nice balance. Yeah, nice balance to the squad, as well as some of those more experienced heads who have got promotion before. And it feels like the squad's in a much better place. And yeah, and I think the fact there is one loan in Keena, and I think that also sort of makes sense. I think on the day with Chalobah, it was one of those that could have been a loan, I think. It was trying to work out which way it was going to go. But in Keena, you know, as a player who's not had those minutes or appearances to really back up and say, you know what, this is going to be a great addition. It's almost, there's a little unknown there, and I think that loan gives a bit of flexibility. So it's certainly a change, and it's a welcome one, I think, particularly in terms of, you know, we've talked at length about squad planning, and you know, Scott Parker's grievances at the end of the last season were about the squad turnover, and he was right. You know, Marco Silva's picked up on it a couple of times in his press conferences, where he said, almost pointedly, where he's saying, look, this isn't the same squad, as if, you know, with Fulham going down, everyone's saying, oh, they've got a great squad, they've kept all their players, and he's like, no, we haven't. You know, you compare it to other sides, even in the Championship. I think I saw a statistic that Fulham have actually got, in percentage terms, they've had the biggest turnover of actual players in their squad because of the players who've left, like the first starting 11, I think, because of those low knees. And that change is difficult, and it's difficult to manage in terms of the other players in the squad, those who are cast aside. You know, there is an element of squad management there that needs to be considered as well. But it feels like things are moving away from those major changes that we've seen, and the fluctuation of numbers as well.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of those where just that instability continues to breed instability, right? Until you set it on, and it's building a palace on quicksand in many ways when you're relying on it. And I think it's interesting because you can understand why the loans came in the way they did. And you look at Cavallero and Knockaert, and the way that the squad was put together at that point felt relatively sensible off the back of what had happened the year before in the Premier League, where loads of money had been splashed. Certain players hadn't made the grade. We'd spent, you know, big fees on getting people through the door, giving them long-term contracts. And suddenly you've gone, right, okay, let's get proven quality in the division that we're in on loans with, well, what we thought were options turned out to be obligations. That's what's burnt the bridges there. Now, last year, made that change to go to loans with options. But if you get relegated, there's a lot of those that don't want to take up those options, or those options are predicated on the fact that you stay in the Premier League. And it feels like we've slowly, in the 4 years perhaps, worked our way towards a solution that feels like it's more wholesome and more stable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's talk about deadline day itself then, right? And I suppose there was a couple of names chucked around. There was obviously Keane and Chalobah. There was Matt Grimes, who's been chucked around for the entire summer, you know, at Fulham. There's Reggie Cannon, which has come out belatedly about Boavista. And earlier in the day, there was a couple more names throwing around. Emil Kraft from Newcastle was chucked about for a little bit. There was talk of Zaifwick from Hertha Berlin. A couple of right backs, a couple of centre midfielders. What was your experience of what was going on the day?
I think coming into it, obviously once over the weekend, I think it sort of starts from the weekend really. You know, once Anguissa had come out, and it wasn't just that he was, you know, there was a link to Napoli. It was quite clear that this was one that had wheels, had legs and was going to go through. And then from that point, Fulham started to move. And there was the bid for Matt Grimes on Sunday, which was rejected by Swansea. And that was, I think at that point, there was a sense from both sides that Fulham probably weren't going to return. There'd been an inquiry, I think, into William Carvalho at Betis.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't clear. But then that's what the noises were. But at the same time, you thought, well, this is Fulham. I can't see them, Fulham, not coming back in for Grimes on the final day. And that's exactly what happened. They went back in for him, made another bid that was rejected. And it was at that point that Fulham, you know, pretty much moved on. You know, they had a valuation of what they thought Grimes was worth. Swansea had theirs. And once it was clear that Swansea weren't going to move, Fulham turned to other targets. Grimes is an interesting one because, you know, there were those rumours quite early in the window about him. And I think he was one that whenever I was sort of asking about, you know, what Fulham are looking to do, you know, the response would be, yeah, he's sort of liked. But there hadn't been anything concrete. There hadn't been that sort of movement to actually get him. And I do wonder, and I don't know this for sure, but I do wonder how much that's tied to the players that were there. You know, we've seen someone come in after Anguissa has left, and you know we've known that Anguissa's wanted to go since, you know, I think pretty much the start of the summer. He didn't want to play in the championship. Didn't want to play in the championship 2 years ago, and I think he's been quite open and honest with the club about that. So once someone like Anguissa or Jean-Michel Seri, once they hadn't moved on, I think there was that question of, well, are we going to be left with them? Not in the sense that that's a bad thing. We know how good Anguissa is. But if a deal wasn't to be done, then, you know, you're going to bring someone in, and then suddenly you've got a bit of a problem in terms of your options. So it didn't surprise me that we then started to see movement once Anguissa had actually gone, and there was that sort of connection. Nat Chalobah, of course, I guess for some it may have come a little out of the blue. My colleague at Watford, Adam Leventhal, had highlighted that, you know, that Chalobah had that Silver connection. Chalobah was there when Silver was appointed in 2017. Played in, I think, the first five games of the season. Did really, really well. Got an England call-up and then had a really serious knee injury, which has sort of disrupted his career to date. So there was that connection. Silver certainly liked him, gave him a really good sort of reference for him and I think put forward his name. So once it was clear that Grimes wasn't happening, I think Fulham turned their attention to Watford and to Chalobah, and there was a deal to be done for Keane. I think in terms of his sort of situation, there was a bit of uncertainty throughout the summer with him because he'd been on loan at Granada and then moved on to, you know, the start of the Premier League season. It was clear he wasn't in Shisko's plans, and then they started to look for some options, and there was other interest. You know, Bournemouth were another one who were looking at him. And you know, once a deal could have been done.
It's always good to get one over your old voice, isn't it?
I wasn't going to say it, but yeah, there's certainly a nice little rivalry there. So
the ruts of the rivalry.
Well, yeah, well, could call it that. Your words, mate. And yeah, so once it got to later in the evening, once we started to hear about Chalobah, we heard about Keane. He was one that I think had been on the club's radar for a while, but one of those it probably would have seen out of reach, purely on the basis that when he was at West Ham,
there were some big clubs sort of sniffing around him, and he wanted that sort of game time. Ultimately went to Watford, and then it's been sort of quiet since then in terms of his appearances and so forth. And now the opportunity is presented to bring him to Fulham. So both of those ones sort of happened later in the day. It was quite strange because it was a slow start. Then you got the Grimes bid that was rejected, and then we got heard about Chalobah and Keane and that one as well. And there were other names you mentioned as well, and they're ones that, you know, I've heard otherwise to say that there was no interest in them, and I'm sure they would have been considered. But it looks like of those, it was Reggie Cannon that I think more has come out later. I was only able to sort of really confirm what had gone on there well after the deadline. So he was one that nearly came in from Boavista. That would have been a loan. He's a US national team fullback. Mm. I think he's behind Serginho Dest in the sort of pecking order there. And that one didn't quite make it. Fulham didn't quite get it over the line, but that was moving towards a deal. So that would have been the right back. You know, Silva said that after Kenny Tetta's injury, that had altered their plans. The sense I got was that centre mid was the priority coming into the day, purely after Anguissa going. And then if there was a right back to be done, then they would. I think Fred Gilbert at Aston Villa was another that was linked. I think he may have been looked at, but he wanted to go back to France and did so. I don't think Emil Kraft was a goer, actually. Not to say that wasn't interest from Fulham, but I think from the player side, it didn't happen. And I think that probably slowed what Newcastle wanted to do as well. So there was a lot of moving parts, a lot of things to try and keep track of, and a lot of things that you want to say, but you have to be absolutely certain. And it's very difficult when things change so quickly. I mean, if you take Chalobah and Keane, I think at the start of the day, they may have thought they weren't going anywhere, but things can change quite quickly when different things change. So in the end, Fulham got what they needed. Maybe could have gone for a right back, but I think with Cyrus Christie not going, I think that in a sense probably it's understandable a little bit. I think, you know,
well, it'd be interesting to see if he's rehabilitated into the squad. We haven't seen anything.
Well, exactly. If they had got another right back in, I mean, it would have been what, 5 on the books, which is a lot.
And obviously there's the kind of double youth element of Steven Sessegnon and Marlon Fossey, which we don't really talk about, right?
Include Fossey. Unless my maths is appalling.
So there's a lot going on there, and a lot of players that, you know, in those two youngsters especially, that we haven't seen for a long time, you know, who have been injury hit, who had such high ceilings, it seemed, when they were coming through as youngsters, and who we really haven't seen if they can kind of cut the mustard, I suppose, for a while because of their injury records. Now, that isn't me suggesting that they're going to get chucked in at the deep end, because I'd be surprised. But on the whole, it'd just be interesting to see if that's what Silva turns to now, or if he sticks with a kind of trusted lieutenant in Dennis Odoi to fill that gap until Kenny Tetta's back. I'm intrigued by Reggie Cannon because I've watched him a fair few times, both for the USMNT and at Boavista last year. And I know he came over from Dallas basically with Lille in mind, and Lille and Boavista are linked. And we've seen it happen a couple of times with someone like Angel Gomes from Manchester United and a couple of other players who have shifted between them. I believe they're owned by the same group. And Reggie Cannon, I think, came in. They had quite high hopes that he was going to step up at Boavista to be very good and then move on to Lille. And it hasn't really gone for him, you know, not under Jesualdo Ferreira last year. The times I watched him, he struggled a little bit, you know, in a Boavista side that really struggled last year and ended up staying up by the skin of their teeth. And, you know, I've seen some kind of thoughts being like, oh, it would have been nice to have 3 of the 4 of the USMNT back line. And sure, of course it would. You know, on paper, that's great. I'm not convinced. I'd really like Reggie Cannon to do well. And obviously, he's still so young that there's obviously so much room for growth there. And I think they obviously seen something to bring him over so young and kick him into European football and try and push him forward. But there is an element of me that's relatively glad that we're not seeing the sharp end of that experiment, because I have watched him recently and not been convinced by Reggie Cannon's ability. So we'll see if Fulham go back in for that one in January or how things pan out. I mean, just want to talk quickly before we move on. We're going to talk about the window as a whole, about Keane and Chalobah and what they bring to this side and how they develop. And you and I spoke on on deadline day night about the fact that between them, they basically cover all the positions. And perhaps that's the most interesting thing about the pair. We've got a kind of 6-8 hybrid and an 8-10 hybrid. And it means that across Silva's midfield, we might be able to see them slot in across the pack.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think I think you wanted a similar profile to what Anguissa brings. One of the things Silva has said when talking about wanting to keep Anguissa, if he could, as you would, was the fact that he offered something a little bit different to the rest of Fulham's midfielders. And I think in Keane and in Chalobah, you do have something different, actually. As you say, Keane in particular is much more of that 8-10 player. I think he's quite versatile. He can play across the forward positions as well. Mm-hmm. He's very much an attack-minded player. And that makes him quite useful, actually. When you think, I mean, we've talked about Fabio Carvalho, and I think Fabio Carvalho is obviously the main man at the moment. But behind him, you know, there's not someone you'd say is absolutely a number 10. Bobby Decker Davide can play there. Harry Wilson can play there. But in Keane, you've probably got someone who could more comfortably fill that position.
Yeah, I think so. So it's not necessarily a pure 10 that he's playing as, right? He, you know, this isn't a 4-2-3-1. It feels a lot more like a 4-3-3 a lot of the time.
Yeah, it is actually. And that's been quite interesting. It does seem to change. It does seem to change
for a game.
It's normally Carvalho in that position and how high he will play. And we've seen Carvalho score goals. And I think Silva wants his sort of 10 player to do that. But then, you know, you consider how advanced Josh Onuma is also playing. He's also playing, but almost as that more dynamic option. And I think that maybe is where Chalobah will come in. Now, he is quite a defensive-minded player. Of course, he started his career as a central defender when he was coming through at Chelsea. And that was, you know, he sort of changed. I think after a loan spell at Watford. And then I think Mourinho also saw him as a midfielder too. So he's got that sort of defensive background. So I think that's where he'll be strongest. Now, I think when we've thought about Anguissa, one of the main areas in which, you know, he probably would want to improve and needs to improve is in the final third and affecting games in that area. So I'm not going to say they're like for like, because Anguissa is a very unique player.
Yep.
In terms of what he brings to the table. But Chalobah will certainly offer that steal, which I think if you look at, say, Jean-Michel Seri as a six, doesn't necessarily bring. Now, Seri's been very good, actually, in that sort of defensive role, sweeping. But positionally, it can be quite fluid. It's not always the type to cover those areas. Harrison Reed's a different type of profile. He's much more of a ball winner, much higher intensity type of player. Whereas Chalobah, I think, would get that bit more stability, that steal, and that possession turnover type. So I think in that sense, you do get that different mould, and the same with Keane.
Well, it's being able to mix it up, right? And mix it up for different teams. And some teams you're going to want to pass to death, and some teams you're going to have to lead a little bit tighter in the middle and provide that steal that you talk about. And I find it interesting because I've been watching Keane for a while, not only at Granada, but when he was playing in the Portugal under-19s, he obviously got one final where he lost to an England side that was very, very talented and had one Ryan Sessegnon playing on the left wing, but also won 2 years later against Italy in a final, another good side that had Zaniolo and Moise Keane and Sandro Tonali playing in it, a very good side. And interestingly, he kind of played as the left hand in a three, you know, the left centre midfielder in front of a defensive midfielder, but probably with a little bit more license to be the attacking mould. And I think that's maybe exactly how Silva is setting up with Carvalho, right? Especially in a game like Millwall, where we saw Carvalho kind of driving from deep a lot of the time and starting to open up in the middle. I think Keane has done that for long periods. And, you know, he played with very good sides here. But like Florentino Luis was the right-hand pivot of that, if you will. And so he's someone who can obviously play at the base. He's a bit more of a kind of Harrison Reed-esque figure. Who kind of wins the ball, who's dynamic, who gets about, who's happy to snap into challenges. And in the other kind of side of things, he played alongside Jadson Fernandes, who we saw at Tottenham last year, obviously, but mostly at Benfica, where he kind of was a more attacking option. Yes, he's dynamic. He very much is a pure CM, if you will. But playing them together, felt like they had a defensive midfielder behind them who won the ball a lot. And in front of them, he had these two kind of ball-playing, you know, driving midfielders in Fernandes and Keane. And between them, it felt like they were able to dovetail off each other. And so that's maybe what intrigues me most. Could you play, for example, a Keane and an Onana together in a game that desired a little bit more work rate and drive in the middle in front of someone like a Harrison Reed who was able to just provide the steal and sweep behind them? It would give you that you know, that real kind of drive and energy in the middle that Fulham perhaps at the moment are, you know, obviously Fulham are playing beautifully and you wouldn't want to change anything up, but there's also the element that at the moment we're quite light and fluid and everything's doing, you know, really nicely. Being able to mix it up and change things up late in games and giving yourself those extra options and those extra runners from deep, I think is something that maybe Silva's after here, and being able to be flexible with what he's offering. And I think Chalobah and Keane offer that in kind of tandem.
Yeah, the 6-8-10 thing is very interesting. I think it's, you know, we could, in terms of Silva's style, and I think we'll see this more and talk about this more as the season goes on, but it's very, very set in what he's doing. And it's very similar to what he's done at previous clubs, both in England. I think at Everton, it was much more of a codified 10 in Gylfi Sigurdsson. And I think there was a sense that this was almost a sort of a sacrificing his style a little bit to sort of accommodate him because of what he can bring to the table. But then I'm just thinking of Watford maybe as an example when he first started. So this would be before Chalobah's injury. So you would have had Abdoulaye Doucouré, you would have had Nathaniel Chalobah, and you would have had Tom Cleverley. And Tom Cleverley was that sort of 8-10 player, one who would be that bit more advanced, that one who can link the ball from the left side, the left winger, the right winger to the forward to sort of bounce things around a little bit. And I think in Greece, he used Kostas Fortunis and he would play much more advanced and he would score more goals. Yep. So it's really interesting how they are set in that way. And you've got players like Jean-Michel Seri playing as the six, and maybe Harrison Reed can also play as the six. And Josh Onana is probably more of an eight because he's still advanced, but he's not as advanced and he's doing that extra bit of work. And then you've got the sort of 8-10 and that being Carvalho, and I think Keane fits in there. I think with Chalobah, maybe he fits in the Onana side. I agree it would be that sort of position, and then maybe there is that ability to be flexible. And we've seen Reed against Stoke came on and played in that position that was much higher, and you know he's spoken about when I spoke to him at the end of last season, he says he wants to add that to his game. He doesn't want to just be that. When he was younger, he was in that more rounded central midfield role, and maybe Silva can work on that with him. So there are really good options in there, and I think that's the key takeaway now, that you know, with the Championship, I think the games coming up after the international break, it really is Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday for the next sort of month after. There will be injuries, there will be little niggles, there will be times when you want to rest people, and Fulham will have the ability to do that.
Right, after the break, we are going to be looking a little bit more at this transfer window as a whole. And we have some very special guest insight on our Samba new boy, Rodrigo Muniz. Don't go anywhere.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast with me, Jack Collins, and the Athletic's Peter Rutzler.
Hello, sorry, there was a, you know, there's only two of I'm working on the dynamic here. You know, normally we would chip in at this point. Wasn't so sure. But yes, hello everyone.
I'm trying to stick to Sammy's rules. The first time he introduces everyone says a little bit more. The second time is just hello, and the third time Sammy says all the names, and yeah, then you just roll onwards. But
See, I wasn't sure if you were going to do that. You know, this is why it's so new, and it's really unfamiliar territory for me, mate. So yeah, we'll keep going. We plough on.
It's new and exciting, mate. It's new and exciting for you. The old guard of the listeners will know that this is a semi-regular occurrence, but it hasn't been a Thursday club yet. So so I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, but let's talk about this transfer window as a whole. And I think maybe the first thing to look at is the outs, right? You look at what's happened here, and obviously the latest out is Andre Frank Zambo-Anguissa. He's gone to Napoli. He's going to be playing European football, Serie A football, at one of the biggest clubs in Italy. It feels like the kind of loan that he was after, or at least the kind of move he's after. But I think people were surprised that there was the extra year agreed for his contract.
Yeah, that did come as a little surprise. Keener also had the same thing actually coming from Watford, so they actually did a similar sort of thing, which is, I think, when you have that option, I mean, Keener, in Watford's case, it was the option, but being able to do that and being able to persuade Anguissa to do that is a good thing from a financial standpoint. One, in terms of, if we go into the real technicalities of how a transfer fee is, you know, spread out over the length of a contract, that certainly helps, reduces those annual fees. But then also, you protect the value of the asset. You know, if Napoli do not exercise the buy option, which I'm told is 17.3 million euros, if they decide they don't want to do that, he comes back to Fulham. And rather than it being 1 year left on his contract and there is a real pressure there, there's 2 years and there's more value there. And it allows Fulham to then get a similar deal rather than sort of club coming in and going, oh, do you know what? We want cut price now.
If there's an obligation, you don't need it. If there's an option, you do, right? That's where
we're at. And the fact Fulham were able to do that, the fact that Fulham and Tony Khan were able to persuade Anguissa to do that. I think Tony Khan had a similar influence when he came back. I think Villarreal came in with an offer, and there was that element of trying to persuade him to stay because, you know, he'd done so well there. And that really... It's just a small thing that makes a big difference. But, you know, as you say, he's gone to Serie A, and he's such an interesting one, Anguissa, because I know we haven't seen the best of him. We definitely haven't. We've seen those glimpses. The first season was difficult. It was that transition and everyone was having a bad time, to be honest. And then did really well at Villarreal, comes back to Fulham. There was that run after the Leicester game. The Leicester game was obviously his like high point, as it turned out, where we all were raving about him and hoping he would maintain it. And then gets to January, and then after January, it just didn't work out for him. It's just form went off the boil, and that was a bit of a shame. But I think in terms of general perception, I think a lot of particularly Fulham fans are still sceptical about his ability and not fully convinced. And what I would say is, just judging from the interest there was in him, and then where he's ended up, you know, he has ended up playing for, as you say, Jack, a club who are playing in the Europa League, a team that are looking at the Champions League, that is really his level. It was one of those things. I think there was a sort of disappointment where he wasn't involved against Middlesbrough and, you know, why have you got a player who doesn't want to play? In reality, it's probably understandable. If you can move, then you would. And it's certainly in his case. And, you know, to be fair to him, he did come back into the fold. He did come back into the picture and did come on. And we've talked about his sort of... His excitable cameo against Millwall. I think against Stoke, watching him warm up. I know this was commented about, but I watched him when he walked out of the tunnels after the warm up. It didn't look like a guy who was going to be there for very long. much less intensity from him, I think, before that game.
That's also just a bit how he is, right? Sometimes you just get languid.
This was another step for Frank. But yeah, I mean, to lose Anguissa, of course, I mean, Anguissa in the Championship would have been a joke.
Maybe unfair.
It would have been a bit. And, you know, you've got to do something. You've got to give something back to the second tier pod guys. So, you know, in the end, Fulham, they've got a replacement and a very good one in Chalobah. I mean, wasn't it in January that he was linked with Leicester, I think, as part of that sort of
Triad deal, which was linked with Hamza Chowdhury going one way and Matty Longstaff going another with Watford and Newcastle. So he's a good player. There's a good player in there. And of course, it's a shame to see Frank go. He could still return, and we may see him again potentially in the Premier League.
It's the most chaotic thing ever if he returns again for another season in the Premier League. I think people will be like, what is going on here? Like, it's all just a bit mad. But no, I think he'll thrive. I mean, when there was links to Roma, I said it on this pod when it was links to Roma earlier in the summer that I thought he'd thrive in Serie A. I think he'll thrive there for Napoli. It's such a great side, and playing alongside the likes of Fabian Ruiz and Zielinski and in that midfield duo and behind the likes of Insigne and Irving Lozano. It's going to be some side. So I'm excited to see what he can do over there. And, you know, I wish him nothing but the best. And but we move on to, you know, to our campaigns, and we move on to what we brought in. And I suppose the two, three we haven't really spoken about yet are obviously Paulo Gazzaniga, who came in on the same day as Harry Wilson. And then we signed Rodrigo Muniz. And so, I mean, Gazzaniga and Wilson, I think there was a fair bit of consternation, should we say, when Gazzaniga came in, because it felt like, you know, you brought someone in here who's probably about the same level as Marek Rodak, and someone who's come in to kind of challenge rather than be an understudy. And I think people were excited for Marek Rodak to get a shot. Last year was one thing with Alphonse Areola coming in. It, you know, Fulham for a while had one of the best goalkeepers I think we've ever seen down at the Cottage. But definitely someone who was top tier in world goalkeepers, you'd almost say. And this is a little bit different, because with that, you go, okay, fine. There's one thing being like Marek should get a shot. There's another thing saying Fulham have brought in an absolutely elite tier goalkeeper. This is a bit different. I think people were a little bit put out. But to be honest, he seems to be growing by game by game.
He hasn't had much to do, so I'm finding it quite difficult to make an accurate assessment of Gazzaniga. Clearly, you know, he's impressing Marco Silva and his staff. You know, Fulham's goalkeeper coach is Hugo Oliveira, who has worked with Edison and Jan Oblak, your Jordan Pickford. So he will know his goalkeepers. I still part of me thinks the jury's still out, and I think part of that is because we all want Marek Rodak to play. Because of the fact that he is a young goalkeeper, because of what happened last year, because of the fact, you know, he has done it in the Championship, has secured promotion before. It's a difficult one. And that makes it, in fairness, quite difficult for Gazzaniga to come into that environment and to make a claim and to win people over. And it's not like he's being peppered and can make loads of saves to show off either. You know, he has to stay concentrated for most part of 90 minutes, not doing very much, and then suddenly there's a cross coming in the last minute, and he's got to deal with it, and he's had a couple of nervy moments. And I think, you know, that's why I think there is that sort of added sense of, well, how good is he? And I think your assessment is pretty good there, Jack, because it was different with Areola, wasn't it? You know, Areola was a cut above, and it was okay, we can understand that. I think it's going to be harder for Rodak to take. You know, I spoke to him when he was at the Euros with Slovakia, and I was surprised at just how disappointed he was that he wasn't involved last year. And if that was the feeling then, and of course there was a Premier League element and you want to be in the Premier League, and you'd be worried if he wasn't disappointed as well. But I think it will be even more disappointing this year. And it's, you know, Silva said he doesn't have a number one. And I guess it's for now it's Gazzaniga's shirt.
To lose, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And to lose it. And until he does, until that happens, then it's going to be like this. And the good thing is that Fulham have that dynamic. If something does happen to one of those goalkeepers, there is another goalkeeper can come in who is more than competent at that level. And that's where it's pretty strong. And
if August you know, fails, we can bring Fabry in.
Yes, yeah, Fabry is still here.
How or why I don't know, but fair play to him,
he's still here. I think he's been able to leave, but it's not happened, so
the Turkish window is still open. Let's not rule anything out just yet, but yeah, he's just chilling. So well, look, if it all goes to there, at least we know that Fabry can come in and, you know, might be half decent. You never know, because we didn't actually really see him ever.
No one's seen him in these intervening years. So who knows, he could come back in and he could be unbelievable.
So
maybe he's the answer to all our problems after all. Right, let's quickly touch on Harry Wilson. I think we've spoken a lot about him, but you know, there were skeptics, and I would include myself in this when Harry Wilson came in, that we were signing, you know, a better version, I will say, I'll give myself some credit, but of kind of an Anthony Knockhart-esque figure, someone who was going to cut inside and shoot 30 times a game from ridiculous distances, from bad angles, no matter if there was people in front of him or not. I think I've been scarred. But on the whole, Harry Wilson has been absolutely exceptional. Hands up, he has been very, very good. Yes, there was the kick out, obviously, against Huddersfield. But when Harry Wilson has been on the pitch for Fulham, he's been very impressive.
He has, hasn't he? And I think I am a little, not surprised, because we saw him do it with Derby, but he's clearly thriving in the system and the way Silva's playing and the freedom that gives the forward players. We saw that for his goal, the first one against Stoke City, where he's drifted over to the left. There is that ability to be flexible. Carvalho had gone out to the right and links up well on that side and plays off Mitrovic. And maybe he's playing with a bit of a point to prove, or as if to say, look, I should be in the Premier League by now. Almost as though circumstances conspired a little against him in that, you know, with the pandemic and Liverpool wanting quite a high fee for him and the fact that he wasn't able to get those moves despite there being some interest, and obviously had that season at Bournemouth which I think we talked about in an earlier pod, but you know, it wasn't great. I mean, overall he was good, he was still their top scorer, but it was difficult, it was hard, it was a bit more of a slog, and it just didn't seem to suit him the way they were playing, and he wasn't able to affect games, he would drift out of games quite a lot. Clearly this is a different level, it's a different standard. And again, that will be the question. I guess that applies to Mitrovic too, and a couple of other players. You say, well, can you hold that in the Premier League? But from what we've seen so far, as you say, it's just been brilliant when he's been on the field. And at the moment, you back him to get to double figures very, very quickly, and maybe beyond that. And that's a huge thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, look, it's about that hunger as well, isn't it? It's about that desire. And we saw something similar with the interview yesterday with Domingos Quina, and he said, you know, I'm nervous because I want this to go well. And it's that element, isn't it, that he obviously thinks, and Harry Wilson probably similar, that they haven't quite got to the point in their careers that they thought they'd been at by now. And, you know, there's that kind of hunger not to get left behind. I think there comes a point in your career where maybe you go, right, okay, maybe I wasn't quite as good as I thought I was. You know, kind of someone like Gerard Deulofeu springs to mind, right? Who at some point just accepted that he was like, I'm going to just play for a mid-table Serie A team. Now, that's no disrespect to Udinese, who are a very good side. But at some point, Gerard Deulofeu realized that he wasn't playing for Barcelona. He wasn't going to be playing for Barcelona. And he had to make that step away in order to kind of push onwards and get on with his career. I don't think we've reached that kind of settling point with some of these players. And I think that's an exciting thing to be part of, because they're really, really driving on. And it doesn't just happen to older players. And you look at someone like Patrick Roberts, right, who left and everything didn't quite go to plan. Those first years at Celtic were excellent. He was unbelievable up at Parkhead. And then the next things just didn't work out and didn't work out and didn't work out. And now he's with Troyes, who, you know, again, there's no disrespect. They're Ligue 1 side. They were promoted last year. They're part of the City Football Group, sure. But you've seen all of these moves, and you know, it's not other clubs coming in and being like, we want Patrick Roberts. It's City being like, okay, pop out to Girona for a bit because we have good links with them. Pop up to Celtic for a bit. We have good links with them. Pop up to Troyes for a bit. We have good links with them. And you see someone who was such a talent just almost accepting their fate. And I'm glad that Fulham are targeting players who aren't doing that, who are hungry to push themselves back to be the best that they can be. And it is exciting. And, you know, look, you know, maybe that's harsh on some players and maybe that's not how it is. And maybe you get stuck in certain situations, but it does feel like Fulham are after a particular kind of personality type almost.
Yeah, no, and I completely agree. And you know, that desire is what you want, I think, as a coach, as Marcus Silva would want that. He wants players who wants to be at that level. And I think that's kind of the vibe, really, you know, about across the club. You know, you've got a manager there who wants to be in the Premier League. You've got a squad of players who want to prove it in the Premier League because the club have dropped out twice. Some of them had two relegations. And then you've also got the club as a whole. The club as a whole want to be a mid-table Premier League club. You've got the Khan family want to have a Premier League club. They want to show off the Craven Cottage and the Riverside Stand in the Premier League. And I think when you have that collectively, you know, that's a real asset, particularly if you want to bounce back and try and achieve that longer term.
Finally, last player, and the one we haven't spoken about, is the boy from Brazil, and perhaps the person who the Fulham fan base, everybody, all of us, know least about, right? Because
all of us,
it's
Jack,
been incredible hard. It's been incredibly hard to source anything on Rodrigo Muniz, apart from the fact that he scored a bicycle kick once that everybody can see on YouTube. It's a very good bicycle kick. But it has been almost impossible. I spent days trying to find out stuff about Rodrigo Muniz, and I finally, Peter, have found somebody who knows what he's talking about in this regard. So I spoke to Brazilian journalist Kai Mota, who is the Flamengo reporter for Globo Esporte, and he is going to, well, address you all on what you need to know about our new boy.
Hello everyone, my name is Kai Mota. I'm from Globo Esporte Brazil, and I follow Flamengo here for many years, and it's my pleasure to be in touch with all the Fulham supporters at the Fulham podcast. So for me, it's an honor to be in touch with too many Londoners. I used to live in London a few years ago, so it's my pleasure mainly to talk about Rodrigo Muniz. Rodrigo Muniz, it's a very young striker who had an amazing beginning here in Flamengo, but the competition for him is too high. He's competing for a position with Gabigol, who is one of the biggest idol of the history of Flamengo. So he scored the goals of the title of Brazilian League, of Libertadores. He's almost untouchable at the team. And in the bench comes Pedro. It's also a player from Brazilian national team. So as a young star, it would be definitely very, very difficult for Rodrigo fight for a place at the team. And for me, it was an amazing choice for him to go to Fulham and to go to the championship. I used to follow Fulham when Lucas Piazon, who is my friend, used to play over there. And I know that Fulham is a amazing place to improve the younger talents. I remember that Piazon has improved a lot his football while he's playing over there. And I truly believe that Rodrigo Muniz can do the same history over there. And Rodrigo is a striker he's not so many skillful, but he's very good in what really matters, that is score goals. He's an amazing striker for one touch completion, so he can shot with both legs. He has an amazing head. So I truly believe that if you have patience for the adaptation in a very strong football as the Premier League and the Championship, he can be very successful over there. So as I said, I believe that you need to have patience, because it's not that easy for a Brazilian, for a young talent to arrive at this stage of football. Even being the second division, but the championship, definitely it's very stronger than many championships in the first division in other places. So I believe that Rodrigo can be a very good player and striker for Fulham, and this way to be back to the Premier League. So that's it. I'm sorry for any mistake about my English. That's a long time that I'm not going over there, but definitely it's my pleasure to be in touch with all the Londoners and mainly all the Fulham supporters. I love the Craven Cottage, and I hope to be there again soon. That's it. Big hug.
Well, thank you so much to Kai for talking to us and for giving us some insight on, well, what's been a bit of a blind alley, Peter. But I think there's some really interesting things in what he said there. And perhaps for me, it was the fact that he was sort of third in the pecking order at Flamengo, which made it difficult for him. And obviously, you look at Gabigol and Pedro, and they're both very, very good players. And he's going to be behind another very good player in Mitrovic. But it does feel like he's been brought in to be the rotation nine piece in some ways, to get 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes at the end of games, to be able to push on if something goes wrong with Mitrovic. And it's a show of faith from Marco Silva that they've committed to bringing him in, to committed to buying someone that Marco Silva clearly believes in. And that little nugget in there that he can score goals with his left, his right and his head, although he's not going to be that involved in build-up play, I think is maybe music to some ears. It's just Fulham have got a natural born striker again, which we haven't had for ages.
Yeah, the backup striker is in, and I think that's been pretty clear that we've got that. And, you know, as he was outlining, I think one of the key things I think we've stressed, and I think most assume anyway, is that element of patience, and not just because of the fact that he's moved, but because of where he is in his development. And as you say, you know, when you're behind Gabigol, when you're behind Pedro, that makes it very difficult for a player. And yet he's managed to do enough in those matches. I think it was Benjamin who came on and talked about the different leagues and how that sort of works in Brazil and the different types of opponents they face. He's had those opportunities to make that impression, and that in turn has attracted outside interest. And Silva too has emphasized that every time he's been asked about Muniz, one of the first things he'll come back to is it's going to be patient, it's going to need some time. And I think there is that time because of Mitrovic. Fingers crossed, touch wood, he doesn't get injured. I mean, just say about that now say. And then yeah, and we come back in and suddenly Rodrigo starting the first game back at Blackpool. But you know, there's going to be a lot of time needed, and we've seen what Silva's done before with a recruit straight from Brazil and Richarlison. And one thing I think is quite clear that we can emphasize a lot is that they're very different players, completely different players.
Yeah, this is a nine, an actual nine.
This is
nine.
A nine, yeah, a natural nine, a mobile sort of target man who does have that little turn of pace as well, and seems to fit quite nicely as a, you know, as not just a Mitrovic support striker, but also as an option in Silva's system, which we can all see, which is very clear and clearly defined. And it will be that element of how quickly he gets up to speed. Having that, there is a real Portuguese core now, even with Keane coming in as well. That will make it much, much easier for him. And then, you know, going forward, I mean, he's now here. He's finally here. He's been at the training ground now after a long quarantine period, a complicated process, a complicated transfer process. You know, go all the way back to what, the end of July, and he contracted COVID and that delayed it. So he's now here. He's now getting to know his new teammates, and it would be really interesting to see how long it does take for him to kick on. And I think when we look back at Richarlison and how he did at Watford, even though they are different players, he did hit the ground running quite quickly. And I wonder how much that was down to having a coaching staff who were able to communicate and work with him on a very personal basis. And that will be something that hopefully will support Rodrigo going forward. And it's exciting. There is that sort of unknown about him. You know, time will tell if it'll be a good signing or not. But the signs seem to be quite promising, particularly the way in which he was received at Flamengo when that news came out that he was going. So, looking forward to seeing him in action, actually, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is all of our signings. So after the break, for the final break, we are going to be answering a question about our midfield depth before we go. Stick with us.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the third and final part of this Fulhamish podcast with me, Jack Collins, and athletic writer for Fulham, Mr. Peter Rutster. And Peter, I want to finish with a question which we got as an email from David Smith. And he said, hello, can you please explain why it felt to be important to keep bolstering our midfield? I count 11 players who will be vying for a spot in our front six. Harrison Reed, Neeson Cabano, Harry Wilson, John Mikel Seri, Josh Onoma, Fabio Carvalho, Alexander Mitrovic, Bobby Reed, Rodrigo Muniz, Chalaba, and Domingos Quina. That's not even including TC, Passion Anthony Knockhart, Tyrese Francois, or Ivan Cavaleiro, jeez, who I think are a level below or injured in TC's case. Surely not healthy to have so many good players on the bench. I thought maybe you'd be able to shine a light on why Fulham was so keen to push this forwards.
There's a lot of players. It's a lot of players. It's a lot of options. That is one of the challenges that we'll be managing all those players. As we mentioned earlier in the pod, there will be that rotation naturally because of the championship and how it works, and that flexibility will be really, really important. I wouldn't be surprised if Fulham can build that momentum and maintain it, that there is that sort of interchange and allowing, taking some people out, letting them rest, putting them back in. So that's one side of it. I think if we break it down a bit and look at the positions, if we actually look at who can play as a nine, you've got Mitrovic and Muniz. Mitrovic will play probably most weeks, you'd assume.
Bobby Reed in a stretch, you'd imagine.
And Decatur Reed, yeah. No, I was going to say that purely because Silva's actually sort of alluded to that a little bit, saying that, there are options in the squad that can offer something different, can offer that completely different type of centre forward. So there is that side to it. And then if you look at the wide players, Cabano, Caballero, Wilson, Quina, you could throw in there. Carvalho, you could throw in there.
Deco
de Reed as well. And Knockhart, of course. I think Knockhart's probably a little bit further down the pecking order now. Mm. When you look at that as an interchangeable three, say, if we were to take Silva system and turn it into a 4-2-3-1 and have those three attacking left winger, attacking fielder, right winger. So you're looking at six players and then seven if it's Anthony Knockhart. I think if we take the view that Knockhart's probably a little bit further down the pecking order, you've then got a backup for each position, which bodes well. And then you take the midfield, you've got Josh Onoma, Nathaniel Chalaba, Harrison Reed, Jean-Michel Seri, and then also Tyrese Francois behind them, probably is the younger option. Again, that's, with those two positions, because we've gone from a 4-3-3 to 4-2-3-1, that's two players for each, as a backup for each one. So when you do actually break it down a little bit, you can see that exactly how they correlate. And to be honest, it's probably at the maximum of how strong you'd want a squad. And I would agree. I mean, there is probably one too many there. There will be some happy, unhappy players there because they won't get the minutes that they want. And that'll be Silva's sort of challenge to sort of balance that a bit. But when you consider those who are pretty much more in the frame, it's almost like first choice and a reserve. I wouldn't say they were reserve. It's hard to know which is what that will be at the moment because we're still seeing players come back in and that change, and obviously the new arrivals too. So, but there is that fluidity with some players that can play in different positions as well, and I guess that's probably what he's getting at, in that there are players who can play multiple positions here. Do you need a backup for each position? And I think that's a fair assessment. But I think when you look at the quality that's come in, there's one drops out, quality can come in, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, also, as we say, it's often three games a week. And in that regard, there's this kind of point that you go, right, with a couple of injuries, and if you still want to rotate in those kind of heavy game weeks, it gives you the options to do so. And so two in each position, I don't think is too bad an option. And that you're not really talking about Tom Kearney there. And obviously we wish the skipper all of the best. It'd be lovely to see him back into the squad. It'd be lovely to see him wearing that 10 shirt again. It'd be lovely to see him wearing the armband again. And congratulations, if he's listening, on his engagement, which I think took place over the course of the weekend. But it feels like we've not seen TC for a while, and hopefully that comes sooner rather than later. But I suppose there's that kind of gamble you're making on it, that we don't know when that's going to be, and therefore you kind of just have to plan for potentially an extended period without him in the squad.
Yeah, I think that's what it looks like, doesn't it? With Quina coming in particular. It's hard to know with Tom Kearney, because it's been in this position where he's only a few weeks away. He's not that far away. Oh, he's back on the grass. He's doing some work, but then he comes back off it. It's been a really difficult period, and certainly for him, I'm sure. And I guess from Silva's point of view, when he's probably, if you look back at how that has played out and what's going, and you're looking ahead of the season and his own targets, you know, for him, he wants he needs to get promotion this season. That's his job. That's what he's been tasked with, and he will want the strongest squad possible to achieve that. And it looks like, I mean, that's what it appears like anyway, considering the options there are now, that he's taken the view that it may not be soon. So we'll have to see. And if TC does come back, then there really is a selection headache, because that is a lot of players to juggle in those central roles. And it was interesting because I was thinking back to the Carabao Cup game against Birmingham, where Fulham rotated and you had Tyrese Francois and Adrian Pajaziti playing in midfield. And obviously Jay Stansfield started, and Jay's been around the first team since the summer. Wasn't the case with Adrian Pajaziti. He's been with the 23s most of the time. He'd impressed, but they were short in terms of being able to rest players, particularly not using Anguissa. And it's quite interesting how quite quickly things can go from having players available to suddenly it looks quite light. And Silva said afterwards, you know, he's been impressed with Pajaziti. He's done very, very well. But I don't think there was that sense of, you know, this is an option. And maybe that was something that they need to be looked into in the market.
Yeah, no, it would make plenty of sense. Right, Peter, I think with that, we'll probably call this a day. So all that's left for me to do is to say thank you very much.
No, thank you, Jack. Thank you. It's been nice. A nice dialogue.
Yeah, it's a one-on-one, right? It's literally, you've been listening to me and Peter just yapping at each other for an hour. So thank you so much for listening. I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Fulhamish Thursday Club. We hope that you've enjoyed yourself. We will be back on Monday looking at a couple of bits around the international break and starting to look forward to life again at Fulham, where we'll be travelling up to Blackpool. Thanks for listening. Take it easy. You whites.